Welcome to the Artist Mother Podcast, featuring interviews with incredible working artists who are also mothers and compelling conversations regarding parenting and the art world. These conversations create a space for inclusivity and support for artist mothers worldwide. I'm Kaylin Butine, painter, mom of three, and podcast host. I'm so grateful you are tuning in, and I hope you enjoy this episode.
But that's like how I was when I went to, you know, a liberal arts college. I was like, oh, I can major in this, I can major in that, I can major in, like, I like all the different things. And then that's the fun part about being an artist is you get to do all those different things and you can forge your own path, and it can involve community building and it can involve space curation. It can, you know, I mean, education is a component of even running a gallery.
Welcome to another episode of the Artist Parent Podcast. I am so thrilled to welcome two artists who are running galleries today, artists who are also parents. Welcome to Sarah Tuttle and Shannon Ray Fink. Sarah Tuttle is an artist and gallery owner who lives in Richmond, Virginia. Her latest body of work is inspired by early motherhood and the domestic environment. Sarah received a BFA in Studio Art from the University of Richmond in 2009 and an MFA in Visual Studies from Pacific Northwest College of Art in 2017. Sarah opened Foyer Gallery in downtown Richmond in June 2025 to showcase exceptional work by both emerging and mid-career artists from the region and to cultivate a broader collector base for contemporary art. And Shannon Ray Fink is an artist, educator, curator, and gallerist. In 2023, she founded The Middle Room, a contemporary female-focused gallery concentrating on mid-career artists and on creating connections and conversation. She is also the owner and director of Institute for Visual Arts, a community-based art school for children, teens, and adults, which she founded in 2011. Shannon's paintings have been exhibited internationally and featured in print, film, and television. She lives and works in Los Angeles, where she resides with her three daughters and maintains an active studio practice. The three of us have so many threads connecting us. We have so many things in common, and I hope I don't talk either of your ear off and let you all, you know, share as much as you want today. Sarah and Shannon, thank you so much for doing this interview with me.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here.
Okay. So I always start out with the same question just because I think our origin story provides a lot of context for who we become and who we are now. I was wondering if both of you would share a bit, just a little bit about your childhood. I'm always curious to know, like, how much art you were exposed to, if you had artists in your community, or like what threads kind of are connecting back to your childhood that you feel like made you who you are today as an artist. Sarah, would you start?
Yeah. I was that kid that people would, you know, I was well known in the class, right? As the art kid that I would draw, you know, drawings for kids and hand them out and all that sort of stuff. But so I was the kid that was in, I was in my room, I was drawing and collaging and my grandmother was an artist, although she was kind of a lazy artist. Okay. She just didn't work a lot on it. She just kind of, but she did it every now and then. So
like
I did
a hobby
see
artist, her, maybe
hobby artist, but yeah. Like she would say, I'm a lazy artist. Like she would say that, like she kind of didn't, if she had put the effort in, I think it could have been like a real, you know, actual career. But and then also, I mean, my mom was an interior designer, so I grew up with great art in the home. So I think that definitely informed, how the kind of artist that I became. But I won't go on from there, but I didn't actually go to art school for college because even though I was super into it, I didn't think it was like a legitimate.
Of course.
That's not allowed. Like, you know. So anyway, I did end up going to a liberal arts college. And then I did end up majoring in studio art and minoring in art history after professors were very encouraging. So that's kind of the
trajectory.
Awesome. I love that connection to interior design too, because I'm sure that feeds into being a gallerist these days.
Yeah. And that's, something that I was like, wow, this is really actually helpful. So,
yeah. Shannon, what about you?
Oh, what a great question. And because I really do have a specific memory. While it's broad, there's a lot of aspects, but there's a pivotal moment in my childhood that I definitely think led me on my path. Well, I was lucky to be raised by two educators, but my father is a writer and ran a creative writing program at a university. So okay. I'm a professor's kid and an elementary school teacher's kid. Cool. So I definitely was exposed, although I lived in a small town in the middle of Pennsylvania. And there wasn't a lot of art and culture around me in a way, but because we lived in a college town, we had access to all the cultural events at the university. And my parents were, within my own home, we had a huge record collection, a huge book collection. My parents always had, although they didn't have the budget to collect expensive art, there was prints and drawings throughout my home. When we traveled, we went to museums and bookstores and records. Like that's
love it.
You're right. So I was really fortunate for that. And then more distinctly, so I was just kind of always surrounded by that. And then my father for many years taught at a, it was called the Pennsylvania Governor's School for the Arts. And he was there as a writing teacher. And that was where kids were selected throughout the state to attend a rigorous art school throughout the summer and at a college campus. So because my dad taught there, then he took me and my brothers to attend, these culminating performances by these high school kids. So I'm in elementary school and I got to go and witness these extremely talented, teens presenting their work at the end of a summer intensive. So it would range from, poetry readings, dance performances, monologues. And it was such a strong impact on me as a kid that I was like, I want to be one of those kids. I want to be hanging out with those kids. Mm. That's who I am. I just understood that was like my people, even though I was like a kid in a small town and there was not those people around me in my day-to-day, like elementary school life, although I was exposed to it from, the college kids that my dad worked with, et cetera. So I was able to see like outside of the small town I lived in and like what was possible. And that moment in time, I'd say I was probably, 9 years old, 8 years old, that type of age, fourth grade. And I was not distinctly thinking visual artist. I just knew I had to be an artist of some kind and wanted to be around artists. Right. And then it really did. So that's very, and so I spent, all the years to come, I tried everything out. I did signed up for the dance classes and I acted and I was in the school plays. I just wanted to be in that world of an expressive, creative person. And that was just, innately who I was. And then of course, drawing, and making art was accessible to me, but not through an educational place because the programs around were really poor. Yeah. What I got in middle school and high school art was not interesting. And so I was just always drawing and making things by myself. But then once I got to high school, I just, started looking for avenues to go beyond what was there. And that's what I did. So that's another whole story. But so that's like the main big thing in my childhood that led me distinctly to definitely everything that I do in my life has always, stayed on that path.
I love that you were raised by educators. I feel like that is so impactful and just something that I don't know. I just feel like a lot of my favorite people, like either are educators or like folks who are really connected to, those who are educators. And I think like that is why like you know, like your parents, maybe they weren't artists, but they exposed you to culture, right? They had things that they were interested in, and they were always bringing new ideas in the home. And I just feel like that's such an artist's way of living that's really inspiring. But it almost like made me cry hearing you talk about that one experience, you know, that you had, because I was just thinking about my kids and I'm just like, you never know what the one thing is that's going to be the moment that like is something they experience that, you know, they're like, oh yeah, this one time, like my mom took me to this art gallery and we saw this one thing. And like, I remember it for the rest of my life because it impacted me. And I don't know. It's like, it's just reminding me of like the power of exposing our kids to something different, like bringing them to opportunities and showing them the world, you know, it's just valuable.
Yeah, totally.
100%. And I should just add to that quickly is that I also became an educator. So I'm an artist, but I also teach art. And so those things that you were saying also in my along the years, I realized also because I had such bad art instruction, as I mentioned, I just felt like it made sense to add this in here, is that that also really influenced why I decided to teach art, because I saw how art is typically provided. Mm-hmm. So, and it was so, I wanted to be able to bring something different to young people as well. So, and because like you said, Kaylin, you never know when that thing is. And when you speak to any adult, you kind of hear the bad and the good of like this one time, this thing happened that negatively, you know, trajectory or positively. So again, not only what we can do as parents, but as teachers and educators, how important what we do to expose young people to it really is, makes a huge difference. So,
yeah. Yeah. I taught high school and after school programs for a few years. And I found that like art was a really great vehicle for just like teaching them to get out of their, like, this is preaching to the choir, but like out of your perfectionistic, like this is how it should be tendencies. Yeah. So I felt like that was like the majority of the lessons that I had, which was like blind contour. And like, if it's bad, you're going to get an even better, you know, grade. And I can't really remember how much the teachers that I grew up, you know, in public school did that, but I think they did something right, because I feel like there was an atmosphere of like being able to try things. So it's like, I can't remember the specifics, but I'm like, I definitely know I had a great high school art teacher, and she fostered that like experimentation and play and kind of, you know, not worrying about the end result. But I can't even like tell you the exact lessons that she, you know.
Well, that's not the point, right? The point is like learning the process and how to think about it.
Yeah.
I love that.
Yeah. But I do remember like one experience is, so I grew up like in Connecticut, right near New York City. And it's just funny because I went to the Met, you know, if you grow up around there, there's a field trip to the Met in like middle school, I think. But she in high school took the like, whatever it was, honors art, whatever it's called, to Chelsea. Mm-hmm. And at that point, it was just like a few blue chip galleries and some, you know, car park garages, and there was like one diner. But I do remember this exercise, so this might help us as parents or educators, is she took us, it was literally like a Wilhelm de Kooning landscape exhibition at like, you know, whatever gallery that was at. Yeah. And she made us be in there for 30 minutes, and we were not allowed to talk. And it was like it was truly life-changing in the way that, like, you know, all that work is about light and atmosphere and being enveloped in it and all that sort of stuff. And it's like, you don't get there until a certain part of time. So that is a very, very memorable, like, I'm like, my kids are not quite there yet, age-wise. But I was like, that was a good one. She really kind of knew what she was doing in that regard. So
I would totally torture my kids with that. I love that idea. Like, just, I'm going to set my timer. I'm very good at like the phone timer. I'm going to set my timer and yeah, we're just going to like be peaceful and experience. And I love that. That's great.
Notice.
Yeah. And then talk about it after you've digested your thoughts. Right.
Yeah.
Speaking of sort of process and your own practice, Sarah, can you talk a little bit about what you make, describing your work and your studio practice for listeners?
Yeah. So to be very honest, I have not had a robust studio practice in the past year or since
I wonder why.
Starting a gallery by myself. I will get back into it, and I've just put people in place to ask me about it every week. I'm like, I can do one day a week and you're going to ask me about it. But my practice, the most recent body of work was started, actually after I had my first child. And Kaylin, I have to just like say that your podcast was legitimately, like, I'm not saying, just saying this, it was legitimately like the reason why I got over that like perfectionistic, like all or nothing mindset. I'm serious. And because of all the women that came on there and were like, you cannot have an all or nothing mentality. Mm-hmm. And so it evolved out of there in the nap time, you know, chunks of time where I basically was making work that was, I've made rules for myself. So I was like, I'm going to use imagery that's from my home. I was interested in kind of the representing those like tight schedules that you have to keep in, you know, early motherhood, nursing schedules, like the routine, routines. And I was interested in sort of representing it as layers in like kind of a pattern painting, which I had never done anything like that before, that was kind of referencing like wallpaper textiles. And I was using the actual textiles of like my mom's fabric samples from like the 90s. Cause I would like play with those when I was a kid. So those were like the parameters I gave myself. And so, yeah, the body of work that I exhibited last August was basically work that I had started. And I had done it on and off. Like my studio practice was on and off. Like I didn't make anything when I was pregnant with my second kid. Because like my first kid's nap time was like, I would, you know, fall flat on the couch. But,
and let's validate that as a normal thing.
I'm trying to validate that. Like
those listening, take a break. Yeah. It's okay.
Yes. Yeah. So, yeah. So it was really kind of special to be able to exhibit all the work that I had made. Like one kind of body of work since becoming a parent. And so, yeah, the work that I made was really informed by that experience. And it's interesting because as I'm now going to start having a regular studio practice one day a week.
Yes, you are.
I am. It's going to be different. Like, it's not going to be about, it's not going to be as maximalist. I feel like I need a little palate cleanser from that maximalism, but so we'll see. But yeah.
And you have two kids, right, Sarah? And they're, how old are they?
My youngest turned 4 in August and my oldest is almost 7.
Okay.
Yeah. But they are now in school. So I'm in a totally, completely different phase of life. So.
Yes. Shannon, tell us about your own art and kind of like the context for your studio practice as it exists right now. And you're both primarily painters. I don't know if we clarified that, but yes.
Yes, I am primarily a painter. And, oh, Sarah, I completely understand and have... empathy for everything you're saying. Well, since you started a gallery, obviously your studio practice is going to take a backseat. And that really, I just want to tag on that is seriously no joke. When I started my gallery, I couldn't have envisioned how much work it would, I, even though I had a sense and the impact that my own work would go, you know, my own studio practice and time and, or even the motivation towards my own work has shifted since.
Yeah, same.
Because so much of my focus is on, you know, the curation and the support of other all the artists, all the things that we do, does creatively satiate me.
Yes.
And I do mention this to people frequently because curating hits on all the same levels as my own making of my work, like my own painting. So that's part of it, is that I actually feel fulfilled and excited and motivated, stimulated to do this work that then I don't have as, you know, so that's part of it. And then of course, then time. But I've always had, obviously, because I'm a mom now, I have three kids, but I've been a mother for, my eldest is 22 years old. So I've been doing this a long time.
Yeah. Tell us all your wisdom.
You know, I have, my youngest child is 5. So there's a large age gap between my two now young adult children and my kindergartner. So that in itself is pretty wild. But in the sense, I bring this up because I've had such, now that I can look back and see the ebbs and flows in my studio practice or output as an artist, it definitely is, you know, it's a long way. It comes and goes, you know, there's times where I'm way more productive in the studio and times where I'm not. And I've like come to terms with that and accept that. And it doesn't scare me anymore.
Yep.
Whereas it did, you know, many years ago when there was, you know, a longer period where I wasn't, maybe making the work I really wanted to make, but I've always been able to maintain making small things, I'm always like touching. Mm-hmm. I'm always making drawings or little things, but nothing that I wanted to put out there in the world or a substantial body of work. There was many years that passed, being that I had little kids. I've been running the art schools for 15 years now. So, you know, I've always had a lot on my plate. So, and unfortunately the thing that can take pause would be my own art practice. It's like nothing else can go. Like all the posts are in the air. You can't put any of them down. But there's always that one where it's like, well, this is the thing that doesn't feel essential, unfortunately, you know, in my world as a mom and running a business and being you know, self-employed and supporting a family. So I'm just trying to think. So I was saying how, of course, that felt more threatening many years ago, but once I was able to get to different periods where then I was able to create a body of work again and exhibit my work again and be able to resume a practice, I was able to say, you know, I could understand how this will come and go. And then I understood starting a gallery that would naturally happen again as well. But I also trusted that I would be able to get back to it with the same, I don't know why I'm struggling for words on this topic.
Well, I'll just like jump in and say, I think one of the things that like we're all kind of referring to here is, you know, we're interested in being an artist and existing as an artist in the world, not making art necessarily. Like that is part of it. But I mean, one of the things that I often say, I feel like I've said it on like many interviews, is just like, I didn't decide to be an artist because I was obsessed with making things. Like that is a choice that I have, that is a habit that I have built over time because I wanted to be an artist, you know? Mm-hmm. And I guess I just bring that up to say like, being an artist can take on so many different forms. And I think the three of us like are talking about lives that are pretty complex because we're interested in like many different things. And we know that we have like resources for different opportunities and, you know, doing different things. And that fulfills us, like being involved in different things and building community and having a gallery and having your own art practice and being a teacher and, you know, all like that multi-passionate kind of way that we exist right now is part of our process, right?
Yes. Yeah.
I think
I will say there are moments though when I'm having like a studio visit and I'm like, ooh, I need to get in there and push some paint around, you know? So,
well, and I have such jealousy for artists who are not like this, who are just so, no, I'm an artist because I can't stop making things. And that's all I think about. And all I'm just so dialed into my own art that I don't promote anything else. I don't do anything for anybody else. No, it's just about my art. And I'm like, why can't I be like that?
No, because, but that's like how I was when I went to, you know, a liberal arts college. I was like, oh, I can major in this. I can major in that. Yes. I can major. Like, I love, I like all the different things. Yes. And then that's the fun part about being an artist is you get to do all those different things and you can forge your own path and it can involve community building and it can involve space curation. It can, you know, I mean, education is a component of even running a gallery.
Right. And Sarah, I also went to liberal arts school instead of conventional art school. Mm-hmm. And because I also, and so again, this is just like part of being like my authentic self is that while I went to school to major in art, I knew that I wanted to explore other topics. I've always been interested in many other subjects. Yeah. And I bring that's all reflected in my life and all the different things I do as an artist, but I teach art and I run a gallery. Like, so I'm on all sides of it. And, I was always interested in, you know, philosophy and psychology and I minored in sociology in college because I wanted, and that all makes sense to me now, especially, you know, being able to look back at this age to see how that is in everything I do. Mm-hmm. And while I am a painter, there's so much in general that interests me about just being in the arts world. It goes back to that story I said. I was like, I don't care if I'm an actor or a writer. I just have to be an artist. I have to be a pretty expressive human being. And I want to be with those people. But the people really drive me as well. So and that's super important to me. And so that life of being alone in a studio, solely focused on my own work, never was, that's not me.
Yes.
I really need to be surrounded by people and the dynamic and the different switching between the different roles I have suits me. It seems quite impractical really when we say all the different things that I do, but yet to me and the way my brain is, it really makes sense. I like to kind of have part of the time in the studio, part work. I love teaching. The teaching feeds my practice. My practice feeds the teaching because I do it. Yeah. You know, my students get, all that from me as well. And I think most people think that if you teach, it's just like a distraction away from the studio and they would rather not be teaching. Maybe if it was up to them, they would just be full-time artists, but I've never felt that way. I absolutely love doing it. And I think it further informs and inspires everything I do working with other people. So it's not at all like that. I just wish that I had more time, I guess, just to have more time to have, you know, that's really all it is. I really love each of the things I do and they all go together and connect. And so, yeah, I really wouldn't have it any other way. And so I'm okay with it now. And I know that's part of it. And I have bursts and I kind of work in bursts and I'll do I'll have like a year and I'll bang out all this work. And then I might have a year where I don't really make much. And then I know that I might have another and it's, and I'm okay with that.
Mm. Yeah.
Hello, artist parents. This is Kaylin Butine. I'm the host of the Artist Parent Podcast, and I'm the residency director at Kinhouse Artist Residency. If you're balancing creative work with the demands of parenting, caregiving, and family life, I'm extending a warm invitation for you to join us for a week in 2026. Kinhouse is a gallery and artist residency in Fort Wayne, Indiana that I run. It's a one-week residency created specifically for artists. You can come alone, you can come with an artist friend, or up to two friends, so a group of three artists. And it's family friendly, so if you want to bring your children, your partner, or whoever you care for or who cares for you, they are all welcome. The architecture of the stay acknowledges that life and art truly don't need to be separate. So, what does a residency week look like with us? You'll check in on Monday. Our residency provides a two-story, three-bedroom home in a warm neighborhood in Fort Wayne. It's near the Fort Wayne International Airport, about a 12-minute drive. And the house features a comfortable living space, fully equipped kitchen, screen porch. We have a deck in the backyard. The backyard is actually fenced in, so it's really good if you've got little kids who want space to play. You'll spend your week making art with access to our two dedicated studio spaces. There's a standalone renovated garage studio, which is over 600 square feet. It has heat and air. And we also have a basement studio in the house. You'll have Wi-Fi, laundry, just all the standard amenities. And we have really created this space to be clean, to be simple, to provide you with just some spaciousness and a breath of fresh air, to be inspiring and warm and welcoming for artists. Our residency runs on a sliding scale model. For your six-night stay, your fee will range from $250 up to $1,000, depending on your household income and circumstances. Our application has no fee, so part of the reason we charge for our residency is because we're not getting 600 applications at a $45 application fee. We don't put demands on you as an artist once you come here. You will be able to get to spend your time however you want and use it the way that you need in this season of life. But new to our 2026 programming, we are actually offering 4 to 6 fully funded residency spots. So be sure to send in your application no matter what your financial circumstances are. We really are doing everything we can to make our programming as accessible to our artist parent community. And it's just what we love doing. Sometime during the end of your residency week, you and I will do a studio visit. I love connecting with our artists in residence and hearing about your work. I always bring my camera and we do a mini photo shoot. I think it's really great to be able to gift you an updated headshot or just some nice photos for, you know, your social media, your newsletters, those website pages that you could use a nice photo on. I've never had an artist turn me down for taking some nice professional photos during our studio visit. Also during your week, we'd love for you to visit our Kinhouse Gallery and see what exhibition we have showing in the space during your residency. Why is this a good fit for you as an artist parent? Our residency, why choose ours? Because you don't have to leave your life behind in order to reclaim your creative space. Your children, your partner, or your care circle can come accompany you, and you can do what you need in the season that you come here. You can rest, you can create, you can explore, you can step out for a walk or a local coffee. The house actually sits in a walkable neighborhood near restaurants, near my favorite local Italian market, near a cute little coffee shop, near a quilt shop. It is a small but mighty slice of Midwestern community. So if you'd like a week of dedicated art time with or without your family tagging along, please head to kinhouseart.com/residency to read the full details, look at the photos, and apply. Spaces are limited and bookings go fast. We hope to host you in 2026 at our space at Kinhouse Artist Residency, a space that we really have created for artists just like you. Thanks for listening. And if this residency isn't something that you're able to do in 2026, please do me a favor and pass it along to a friend. I would so appreciate it. Okay, let's shift a little bit to talk about sort of the origin story of your galleries. Like, why did you decide to start a gallery? And I guess, like, what is the vision for your gallery? I'm going to have you start, Shannon, because you've got 2.5 years under your belt. And Sarah, you're like, you should like have just written your vision statement. You can like recite it back to me. Shannon, we'll have you go first.
Okay.
How did it start? How did the middle room come to be?
All right. Well, technically, we're celebrating our 2-year official anniversary with the exhibition that is up right now. It's literally a celebration of our 2 years since the inaugural show, which was in September of 2023. However, yes, when you point out that it's definitely been longer than that, that since the inception of it. Mm-hmm. As you say, from the vision statement on, there was a lot of work that preceded that inaugural show. I also count in the years that I spent thinking about it before, I decided to really make that leap. So for me, the experience has been quite a while, and the amount of work that has gone into the past 2+ years now, definitely feels to me more equivalent to 5, to be like the amount of hours.
Yeah. I know too, you've been running the Institute for Visual Arts for like 12, 13, 15 years. And I thought it was just as somebody living across the country, like knowing you through Instagram, that it was a very fluid kind of connection for you to like launch a gallery out of that community that you've built, even if those two things are like very different.
Yeah. Yeah. I consider them sisters really because it's funny because I'm the mother of daughters. but like that theme comes into play there too, because they are completely related and they coexist in the same space, but yet they have distinct individual personalities and goals and, you know, but they definitely interrelate and support one another. So it was in a way fluid and made sense. I had been running the school for quite a long time at that point. And so for many years, I was envisioning that it would, the next step would be to add a gallery to the school, but not a gallery for the students, but a professional exhibition space to support artists both in Los Angeles and nationally. So that was really the impetus for me. I had at that point when it was like, let's say over a decade of running the school, it was so long established at that point that I felt I had the space now mentally. Mm-hmm. Ambitious, you know, ambition wise to add another component into what I do. And in service to artists, it just felt, it only made sense for the students of the Institute to be exposed to contemporary art through having a gallery attached, mm-hmm. that would elevate the educational, experience for all the students. And then also, be able to have it as a teaching space too, that I could also teach through the gallery, mm-hmm. Et cetera. So those were that was the thinking behind it, but then it became a matter of space. How was I gonna do that? I was in a former space, and originally I was not thinking of creating the gallery there. I felt like the idea of starting the gallery meant that I would have to relocate, which I did end up doing, but so that was really the thing that took longer to get it launched, was just that I didn't think that the original space was where I could start it. So I thought, you know, there was like obstacles. I have to find, yeah. et cetera.
You have the vision, but maybe not.
Yeah, right. So that's really the thing that held it, you know, that in terms of me thinking about it for a long time. But eventually I thought at a certain point, you know what, I better just start it where I'm at. I can't. There's this thing about time, you know, that I feel like that's really a big constant battle in my life is like with time. But I thought, well, I could keep thinking about it and waiting and hoping until it all lines up and everything's perfect. Yeah. And that, what if that doesn't happen, or who knows how long that is? And so you just got to go for it and do work with what you have right now. Mm-hmm. And this is coming, you know, like, right, you know, not that long after COVID, and I was not, you know, prepared to relocate at that point. So I thought, I'm just going to start it. It's not my ideal space. So I did start it in the original space I had for the school. And I did carve out a space within a room within it that was literally a middle room within the art school. And I had used it as exhibition space for students' work in the past, but I decided to then make it a professional exhibition space. But it was small, and I had goals for something else, started it where I was, but then right after, it's kind of like you get what you ask for, because I started it, a bunch of things shifted that made it clear to me that I needed to relocate after. So really, although that felt like maybe I would do that in a year or two, I thought, I think once the ball got rolling for me and I just started making it and I opened the doors and I was doing it, then I was like all in.
Cool.
And that I really had to bring it to its full potential. And so that really motivated me. So it happened kind of backwards, if that makes sense. Like,
yeah,
I don't need the space first. And then, but then because I just did it with what I had, it propelled me to actually get the space and to do it really rather quickly. And I ended up, you know, moving down the street, just 2 minutes away from where I originally was, but into a commercial space, and doing an interior design project, to create it. And so now the school is in the back of the space and the gallery in the front. We have a storefront on a busy, retail street. And, but the space, so they flow together. And then it was designed because I knew, you know, I was creating a space specifically for the goals of the both programs were, so that they could coexist, but it was modular, that I can flip it back and forth. So,
well, and I think it's really smart to have multiple income streams like in one space, you know, because to rent sort of or buy like a building big enough to do two things. I mean, that's what we're doing at Kin House, is it's Dana and Mai's studios and then a gallery, right? And so like the way that the gallery helps us afford the studio helps us like invest in the gallery, like vice versa. It's like this little ecosystem, which I feel like is what you're describing, Shannon. Shannon, could you just kind of give us like a snapshot of how many shows a year do you do? And just very briefly, like what is kind of your, like what kind of artists are you showing? Like, is it just, is it mostly your own curatorial vision for the space, or like, how are you kind of picking, you know, what the shows exist of?
Yes, it's definitely curation focused. The gallery's mission is to support primarily mid-career women artists, not exclusively, but that is concentration, as well as focusing on community. But so our current show, it was a very conceptual way to celebrate the 2-year anniversary, was I invited 21 other artists, and I'm in the show this, you know, because of it's a reunion.
Of course.
So there's 22 artists, including myself, and then each artist, and those were artists that had been shown at the gallery over the first 2 years, and then they were asked to each invite a guest of their choosing to exhibit with, and then also bring as a guest to a literal dinner party.
Oh, fun.
We have right now in the gallery, so there's 22 pairs of artists, and it really was a way for me to reflect the spirit of the gallery and its mission, that it is about the people and bringing people together, having rich in-person dialogues. I think also interesting coming out of a COVID time and starting a brick and mortar gallery. And because I teach and everything really is about tactility, and we're not, you know, everything is analog here. You know, even down to our checklist, I don't do digital checklists at the gallery, really, opposed to people being like on their phone, like besides taking a picture, But, you know, I don't even want people looking at price lists on their phone. I really would like people to be as present and with the space and each other as possible. So the way the gallery is it's, you know, it's an intimate space. It really, when people are in here together at openings and other events, they really are brought together. I designed it to be like very warm and welcoming. So it would not feel, there's a lot of galleries in Los Angeles. There was no reason for me to start another one unless I had something different to offer. Yeah. So I really wanted people to feel this distinctly welcomed feeling when they enter into the space, mm-hmm. which is not what you get when you walk into most galleries. Mm-hmm. And because I'm on all sides of the art ecosystem and as an artist, and I know what it feels like to be walking into galleries or being at art openings, and I understand what other artists experience. Yeah. I'm able to bring something as a gallerist different to support the artists that I work with and also the patrons of the gallery and the people who come. And so that was really important to me to really have it be like a nourishing, down-to-earth space that really does keep all the artists in mind. So really the goal, it's not a specific focus aesthetically. It's the curatorial concepts will lead the direction of who I'm exhibiting.
And how many shows a year do you do?
Oh boy. It's been about kind of on a, it's been wavering. It's sometimes it's about every 6 weeks. I'd say this is like the 17th show, I believe.
Oh my word.
So it's been a lot. It's, yeah. And that's a reflection of me really. And, kind of like, I am a little bit of, you know, workaholic. So I'm just
join the club.
Yeah.
Like, oh, let's just onto the next thing and onto the next thing. And I'm very excited and passionate about all these projects. So, you know, I don't give myself a lot of breaks because there's just, again, that battle of time. I just, just so many
ideas, so little time. Sarah, tell us about Foyer Gallery. I know you only started this past summer, but yeah. As Shannon alluded to, I'm sure it's been in your thought process for a lot longer.
There's a lot of parallels with Shannon, but it's really interesting. My the impetus for actually starting was the space. So
interesting.
Yeah. So I said my youngest just turned 4. So Sam and I, so my husband is a small scale developer. And you know, his realtor doesn't generally, the realtor that's a friend of ours. So, okay. Sorry. Let me back up. I have had the idea for a gallery in the back of my mind for a very long time, but I was in the full on, you know, stay at home parent of small children mode. So it wasn't like, oh, I'm going to do this in 2 years. Right. It was like one
day.
You didn't have a
plan, but you had like a dream.
Exactly. It was like one day I will, you know, have the capacity and fulfill this. The space was literally emailed to us from our friend and realtor that my husband works with for no reason. I did not tell Dave that I was looking to build a gallery one day. He literally,
maybe some spirit.
Everything about this is just like, I have no advice because it's all just fallen into place. Like I can't, he emailed us and he was like, this place has Tuttle vibes, which is my last name. And I was like, what are you talking about? I clicked on the email and I was like,
there it is.
It's my art gallery. And I kid you not, I'm just telling you the reality of how this happened. That year we don't build a lot of houses. We happen to have built 4 houses, you know, kind of starter homes. 3 went for asking price. He sent us the listing on a Friday. I helped my husband pick out, I went up on the finishes of the 4th house and it was like a slightly bigger home, 4 bedrooms, but you know, in the city. Mm-hmm. Anyway, somebody really, really wanted it and surprised us by offering way over asking price. We were literally picking up the check for that house on Tuesday. So the listing was sent on a Friday. We were picking up the check on Tuesday.
And meanwhile, I have a 1 year old that's, you know, doing the whole, oh, I decide I'm not sleeping through the night, like, you know, for 6 months. Okay. So I'm in that. I've moved out of my house because our whole kitchen fell into the ground because it's like an 1850 house. So we're redoing our whole kitchen.
Oh my gosh.
This listing comes across. So I'm also
like, I don't need more buildings right now.
Exactly. No, like there's not a capacity, like, oh, I could do this. And I'm like, oh my gosh, this is it, because it's on. So to describe really quickly, Richmond, I'm in the kind of historic downtown, mm-hmm. Which has been deemed, so I'm, this gallery fronts Broad Street, which has been deemed the arts district, because a few years ago, like 20 years ago, 15, I can't remember, somebody basically designated to bring people kind of back downtown. And there were some galleries downtown, a First Friday event, mm-hmm. where all the galleries are open on First Fridays. So this was like within that First Friday sort of arena. Cool. And that was part of my vision to make it accessible to like people who are not necessarily, you know, within the realm of the arts. Anyways, my husband paid everyone that needed to be paid. And we literally had asking price in cash that week. So
I was like, I mean,
this is meant to be.
Yeah.
So that's just kind of like how it's gone. So it's not like, I don't have advice for like, if I was doing it in a more wise way, I would be like, don't get a brick and mortar initially, do pop-ups,
right.
Build your collector base ahead of time. Like I didn't do anything. So. Mm-hmm. So anyway, we got the space and then I was like, oh gosh, what did I do? Am I just like sleep deprived? And then I was like, wait a minute. No, like we'll just rent it out until I'm ready. Mm-hmm. So that kind of gave me peace of mind. I was like, I'll, you know, have time to kind of plan the whole thing. Well, the tenant that was in here already, we just continued to rent it out. Long story short, that dude went to jail.
Oh no.
So basically it was like empty and it was, I'm like, this is such a waste of a space, and unrelated to us. He was not a good day. So that, I'm saying that detail because it like really kind of kicked my butt into gear to like really start planning it. Like I did not feel like I was ready. I did not feel confident, to be honest. Like I really was like, here we go. Like I just really kind of was like, and kind of what Shannon was saying, like, once you decide to do it, if you're wired like us and we don't really do anything halfway, you're just like, all right, well, then if I'm going to do it, I'm going to do it.
A body in motion stays in motion. Like I think of that a lot, like where you're just like, the ball is rolling. Here we go.
Yeah. And so I went from like, you know, stay at home mom. I like got asked in May to do a show that would go up in August. So I was like rushing to like do all this art. And then I, you know, had the show in August, and then I had like the month of August to like get my two kids in school for the first time, both of them 5 days a week. And then I just like hit the ground running with like studio visits. So I'm saying that like, I didn't have a collector base already. I didn't actually have, like, to be honest, like a really tight knit arts community, because I came from the nonprofit educational world in a certain part of town. And most of my friends were nurses and social workers and teachers. And
well, and you were raised, like you were home with your two kids for.
Yeah, I was home with my two kids. I wasn't going to a lot of openings. But I had had enough interaction and I had some art friends that like, I mean, the artist part, being an artist, was so easy. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, I literally like DM'd people on Instagram, which is embarrassing to say, but like, I was like, hey, do you want to do a studio visit? Like, and they're like, yeah. And that's, so I did the artist piece first. I was like, I just really want to get, so my goal kind of, sorry, zooming out was, I was like, all right, the whole point is to show really excellent art, because there are so many, like I was realizing, like there are just so many insanely talented artists in the Richmond region. A lot of them have ties to VCU. Mm-hmm. And yet I didn't feel like they were getting kind of the spotlight they deserved, because unlike LA, they're actually aren't enough galleries to show all their work. So I felt like there was an issue of there's just not enough. And then I also, coming kind of from the perspective where like my friends were not necessarily artists, I had artist friends, but a lot of my close friends were not. I was really interested, and maybe this is like the teacher part of me, in kind of creating a space that felt like Shannon was saying, that was the welcoming piece, was like why I called it foyer. Mm-hmm. Like I was like, I really want people to walk in, feel like they belong here, feel like they can come not knowing anything, and really kind of like build bridges. Because if you know, zoom out and you look at the much larger, you know, art world landscape, like things need to change, you know? And I'm like, we need to create new collectors. Mm-hmm. And I think it's really cool that like the first collector, the first person that bought anything from my gallery was the guy that, he works in construction. He works for my contractor that did this, you know, new railing, you know, and like he was here.
And was he like, I don't ever buy art, but like,
he loves it. He was like, I really like it. And I was like, come here, man.
You can buy art. You can be the kind of person.
And he bought it, and I took a picture because I was like, you're my first collector. Like you're before any friends or like family, you know? And it's really been like that since. Now I am starting to like, I'm reaching out and being very, I'm just like, I got to meet the designers. I got to meet people who are, you know people who are actively looking for art too. But it was really cool because the majority of people who have bought work from my gallery are, they may have never bought a work of art before. It was something that was just like so meaningful to them that they, yeah. So that sort of matchmaking piece is super fun, and really enjoyable. And I'll say like one other thing is that I opened, so sorry, maybe did I summarize welcoming kind of building bridges is like a big thing, but then also showing just like top-notch art, like the quality. I won't, you know, I really am picking stuff I personally really like, and I'm like, you can like it or not. I like it, you know? But that, you know, it was really top-notch quality, but it was also cool. I did like a soft opening for the opening of the gallery itself. And all my openings are on First Friday. So it's a part of this event where anybody can walk in. But the soft opening, it was a show with 14 different artists. And then it was basically like my friends and family. And it was just really cool to see. Cause like, you know, my brother's in finance, as is his wife. This is out of their, you know, normal zone. And then I'm like seeing them talking to the artists for like 15 minutes. And so that is like what brings joy to my heart. And as I've done it for only 4 months, but at, you know, even in that period of time, I've just like realized like, wow, I clearly really like challenges, because it's really exciting to me to be like, wow, okay, I have to think about the business aspect because I'm an artist. I want my artist's stuff to sell. I want them to be able to make money to continue to make art. And so I'm kind of, you know, doing that aspect now is a kind of a fun challenge that I didn't actually think that I would enjoy. And like really quick, like I interned for a gallery in town in college for like a summer. And I remember as a, you know, 20-year-old being like, I'll never work in a gallery because this is like hurting my artist's soul, you know, because you'd get a designer that would walk in there and be like, I need something blue, you know?
Yeah.
But anyway, we all got to eat. And it's cool that the majority so far has been people who have really fallen in love with the piece.
Yeah. Well, I recently heard something that was kind of reframing selling work and talking about how what it does is it closes that creation loop, right? Mm-hmm. Where as an artist, like you you make the work, like you gather the ideas, there's this like big loop and the work goes out into the world and people talk about it and people see it. But then when it's actually like purchased and like collected, right, it either starts this whole new life.
Totally.
But part of like what is so great about that is that for the artist, that loop is then closed and it just like allows space for like new things, like metaphorically and like literally, right? Which is great.
And then I get the fun job of like, I happen to know who a lot of times who I sold the piece to. So I would like get to see it in their home and see how much they enjoy it. And especially if they're like, not this is their first time collector or whatever. Like it's so meaningful that I think as an artist, it's not what you're thinking about when you're making work. It's not what I'm thinking about when I'm making work in the studio. But then when you zoom out and you're like, this is like the coolest part of it. Maybe. Yeah. I don't know. So.
Yeah. I think just being like less like, ew, this is gross. Yeah. And more like, no, this is like a celebration. Yes. And you know,
yes.
can we reframe and be positive? Because we all want our work to sell. Mm-hmm. Right. But I mean, most of us.
Yes. Right.
Yeah. Okay. We are running out of time. I have so much to, I feel like I've only asked you guys like three questions, but we have so much to share. I do want to kind of move us towards resolution, if you will, but I think this is also potentially opening up a can of worms. So let's like take our time with this, but also recognize that we're kind of wrapping up. I just want to ask you about, because as somebody who has been working with artists for almost as long as I've been an artist, and really in the past 5 or 6 years been supporting artists in exhibitions and, you know, now have my own brick and mortar space, I have learned so much about just like professional practices related to artists working with galleries, from shipping work to titling work to pricing work to, and it's stuff that like as an artist, you know, there's great resources out there these days, but you don't really learn it all until you do it. And even that often is, I've found, is not enough. It's really until you're on the other side and you're like, oh, this is why they say that we should put tabs on tape when we're packaging up like a piece of artwork. Like you don't really understand why people say things until you're like art handling a lot, you know, or those types of things. So I just want to like share in a brief discussion about just like, not like, oh, artists are crazy and they do these stupid things, but just kind of like, what have you learned as an artist yourself from being a gallerist that you're like, either I will never do that again, or I took this for granted, or like, you know, this is something I wish I had known earlier because it really matters. Like now that you've been on the gallery side of it, what comes to mind? Either of you can start.
I might just say like, the first thing that comes to mind is just like, being responsive and communicative goes a very long way.
Yes.
And maybe I'm over communicative as a person, but I think that like, you just have to like assume that everyone's really busy and I can't be like hounding you for a response. So I think just like the very basic, like, this is your job. You're responding to emails is like part of your job and filling out the whatever consignment agreement, like think of it as part of your job and like do it professionally. And then that'll go a very long way because I mean, to be honest, like there are artists that missed out on like getting a solo exhibition with me because they weren't responsive and I couldn't wait around and I was booking. So yeah, that would be my, from this perspective, like sort of advice, maybe, I don't know.
Yeah.
And also, you know, as you say that, it's like an opportunity, but it's also in terms of the longevity of relationships, too, yeah. because you could work with somebody one time and it's going to stay one time versus continuing a long-term relationship because the experience is so, you know, it's a positive professional one where you can, the communication is consistent and all the, just the entire time you're working with an artist during, from before, during, and after an exhibition, there are always going to be, there's this, the people that you want to do that again with. Right. And yeah, I find it actually quite surprising how disorganized people can be. When you get to, again, when you're seeing things from all sides, and because I am an artist, so I know what it's like, because I can see it from, with empathy, right? What someone else's experience is preparing the things, but I know it's just so interesting to be able to look at it above and see all the things. But I feel like, yeah, people don't have their material, just simple things. Like people do not have materials together. They can't respond to things in a timely fashion. Or, you know, it, like you said, it takes too many reminders to get somebody to do something. So I don't know. I always am just thinking everybody should just have their basic materials ready to go.
Have folder, them on a Google Drive folder that you know right where there. It is.
Yeah. If anything comes your way, you know, if Sarah sends you a DM and says she wants to do a show, you're like, yes, I can say yes fast. I can get her all the things she asked me for. Boom, 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 that same day. Like, it's really, but it's surprising how many people that is instead very cumbersome for, and it takes them a long time, or they don't have this or that. So, yeah, it's just really a lot of just being organized with your materials.
Yeah.
I think the thing that I've been most surprised by is how, like, there's so much care that goes into the making of the work, but then how little care often goes into shipping it. Like when we receive art packages sometimes, and it's not all of them, of course, there's like, I would say it's like very 50-50. Like some of them show up and you're like, oh, this is so cool. Like how they were so like tidy and informative with the way that they shipped this, and like there's little labels and I know where they want me to cut the box so I'm not damaging everything because they took the time, and you know there's like paperwork included, and then it feels like the other half, it shows up and there's no bubble wrap, there's no, and I'm like, girl, like this is a, you know, a $3,000 painting and the cardboard of the box is like your three times used Amazon box. And it's falling apart. And I'm like, I don't feel comfortable shipping this back to you because it looks like a dog ate it, you know? And, and, you know, I know we're all saying this with like as much grace and empathy as we, like, we're all busy artist parents who, like, sometimes we have stuff to do and we just need to get it in the box that we have, and it's hard. Like I'm just trying to say it's hard, but for me, what's frustrating is when I receive work that is packaged really poorly, it like there's a devaluing of your own work that I see. And I don't think that means everything needs to come in a crate and we have to pay for the premium shipping and, but just package it nicely. That's all, you know, like.
No, it's very obvious. Like when that I've noticed, I'm like, oh wow, this is like, this artist has done this for a while. Like they know, like when they kind of go above and beyond and they at least even write like a arrow, like, great, I know, you know, or whatnot. I am taking notes as an artist.
Oh, me too.
Oftentimes because I'm like, oh, that is such a smart, thoughtful way to do it, you know? And part of it is probably Kaylin, because like, I don't remember having a professional practices course that even really taught that stuff in freaking grad school.
Right. Nope.
What the heck, man?
Nope. No. And you know, shipping isn't even something that's usually taught in professional practices, like the documents and the organization and your artist statement and like the stuff Shannon was talking about is, but yeah, like how even just to ship a rectangular painting in a good way is like, there's thought that needs to go into it. And what you said, like what I really notice is when people think about the person who's going to open the art rather than just the themselves and the way that they're packaging it. Right. Yeah. So if I could say anything about shipping, it's like, think about the way that's about me opening that box and what am I going to like see and experience? Because if it's like chaos or you've saran wrapped it to death and then I don't have the saran wrap to rebox it in or, you know, it's like, it's hard to like, it's just hard to do that.
You clearly have had some bad experiences.
Yes. But I've also had, like you said, Sarah, there's also been some art that I've like been taking notes and I'm like, literally I've screened, like taken pictures and been like, I have to step it up. Cause this
was goals. Yeah. Awesome. You're like, of course. Yes. Yeah. That is important to say. Working with, you get to see all the, oh my gosh, this person has just nailed it. And then you can even elevate what you do yourself. So
And just a simple, like, it takes a lot of work to run a gallery, you know, and I didn't know that until I was doing it. Right. I just feel like as artists we're, oh, they're trying to undercut us and taking the credit for, blah, blah, blah. You know, it's just like very easy to not understand the work that goes in until you're doing it on the other side.
100%.
So Shannon and Sarah, thank you for supporting artists and, you know, just providing excellent art for your communities. We have more to discuss. We'll have to do it another time, but I'm going to move us to our final five. So this is just a quick way for folks to get to know you. Who is your biggest art crush? This could be like a contemporary artist, or it could be like a longtime artist that you've loved forever. Sarah?
So I cannot pick any of my artists because that's not allowed.
That's favoritism. That's like a teacher.
Children, So the first artist that came to mind is actually Claire Grill, who is represented by Derek Eller and a few other galleries. Part of it is because I did buy a painting on paper from her before she like was represented by anyone. So I should have bought like five. But anyway, I just love her work. It's very feminine. It just like glows. I love all the tiny brush strokes when you get up close to it. I love that it's, you know, derived from these samplers, but then it's completely abstracted and it becomes its own kind of just space and universe. And there's this like play on like it's flat, but then it's not flat. And anyway, I love her work. And that was the first person I thought of.
Shannon?
Oh, yes, of course. It's a really hard question, especially when, you know, even as a teacher, like I'm constantly thinking about so many different artists. So it's really hard to pick. I'm just going to
just name a random favorite. Then we won't say biggest art crush. We'll say who's a random helpful. Favorite.
Exactly. I wouldn't call it an art crush, but I would say right now, currently, when I have to just think on the spot, I'm going to say Mama Anderson.
Ooh, good one. Ooh,
yeah, I
thought about her.
And I think about, you know, I look to my left of where there's a collection of books and think about which one I've been picking up more often. And I just found over the last year in both my own art practice and teaching, I kept referring to her. Thinking about, you know, I'd be talking to a student and be like, oh, you should see this painting by... I'm seeing a connection my brain just kept going to her. And I noticed in my own work that I use a lot of color in my work and I always have. But in the last year I was craving black. And I started making these new self-portraits that are completely like, do not have any, like the negative space is truly negative space and is black. Wow. And, but interplaying with color and I felt like there was something about, since I kept finding myself referring to Mama Anderson, and I kept thinking there's something about like her use of black was pulling me in. And I felt like that was like a new direction in my work, and probably why I kept connecting to her. She uses black incredibly.
My gosh, I need to get myself a book of her. I forgot about her. Yeah. She's so good.
Okay, what is a favorite place that you like to travel, or a dream trip that you'd like to go on? We'll start back with you, Sarah.
I, in college, studied abroad in Italy, and I need to go back. So yes,
everyone needs to go to Italy at all times.
I'm not being creative or original, but just Italy.
That's enough said. Enough said.
Yeah.
Shannon?
I'll just be boring too and say I want to go back to France, where I also studied abroad, but I will throw in, I've long wanted to go to Iceland. I feel the landscapes remind me of my own paintings. Never been. So I feel like I would really connect to the way the earth looks there, earth and sky.
Yeah. Isn't Mama Anderson Norwegian? Isn't she kind of painting the...
She is Sweden.
Somewhere up there.
Swedish, yeah.
Somewhere up there.
What is a film or a book that has been a big inspiration to you, or just like something you've listened to or read recently that you're like, oh, that was so good?
I did finally start the Catherine Ricketts book.
Oh, it's good.
I like had put
Shout
it
out
on
Catherine.
A, yeah. And that's fantastic. So I'm going to say that.
I will just say that my favorite genre of books is, memoir and so I do just read a lot of memoirs. I have a stack of books next to my bed, but that's in terms of besides art books, which of course, you know, I've got a million of those and I'm always referring, but in terms of just for pleasure and on a personal note, I will say I love a good personal narrative story.
I love memoirs too. And I feel like that's such like a liberal arts, like everybody's interesting. Everybody has a story.
Yeah. And I also make a lot of self-portraits and things. So I feel like I connect to that, like, you know, storytelling about the self. So there's something about that that connects too, even as an artist.
What is your favorite meal, Sarah?
I would have to say really, really good sushi, which I feel like doesn't exist in Richmond. And so that's maybe why if I go to a bigger city, I want good sushi. So.
Well, LA probably has great sushi. Yes, Shannon, great. Favorite meal.
Yes. I'm lucky to be surrounded by just right here where the middle room is on a street with so many excellent restaurants. So I can just but I'm going to say my favorite food to be is super basic, and it's pizza.
Who doesn't love pizza? I mean, come on. Okay. And finally, I always like to give you space to give a shout out to someone who supports your work, or just someone lately that's been supporting you that you want to share a shout out or thank you to. Start back with you, Sarah.
Sure. I mean, also uncreative, but my husband, he has said yes, okay, to this crazy journey. He is now, like, you know, solo parenting on Saturdays when I'm in the gallery, and has just been like really supportive, even if he didn't really get the vision at first. Like, to be honest, like, I think he was kind of like, I don't know if this is gonna
work. Yeah.
He kind of kept it to himself, and then now he's like, wow, this is working. And I was like, thanks for your but I mean, he's just really was like, this is something that you seem to have a vision for, and so do it. And I appreciate that so much. And so it has felt like a family endeavor in like every way. So,
yeah. Well, especially investing in a building, like, let me put our family finances in jeopardy. Yep. Yes, we will be fine.
Yep. So, that is, he's wonderful. So,
Shannon, what about you?
Yeah, I'm actually going to thank my three daughters their patience with their mom as their mom took on yet another full-time job. Mm-hmm. So I think, and that they can that they understand how important it is. But they're also, you know, they're always at all the open. Even my little daughter is usually running around with the opening. So they, and my older kids will help me in different ways too, like watching their little sister. So she's not at the opening, or so they definitely, my three girls definitely support me in so many ways, but really, again, just that I want to thank them because I do feel there's a mother guilt in there too, everything I do. You know, not only being a working mom is always with its challenges, but then I'm kind of a triple working mom. So I have, but I think that my kids all can see, can understand, but I also think it's like, in a way, like I'm proud of it as like the, the modeling, but at the same time, you know, so
it's complicated to be
to my girls.
Complicated to be a parent with a lot of passion. Okay, where can folks find you personally, but also the gallery? Tell us, like, Instagram, website, what, like, spell them out. Tell us exactly where to find you. I'll link to everything, of course, too, but want to be super clear. Sarah?
Yeah, my personal website, again, has not been updated recently, but maybe will be soon. It's Sarah, SarahPTuttle.com. And then I think it's Sarah P. Tuttle Studio. On Instagram. Also not updated, but will be soon.
But there.
and then my gallery is Foyer, F-O-Y-E-R, Gallery, R-V-A, which is what locals call Richmond, RVA.com. And then the Instagram is Foyer_Gallery_RVA. Foyer was taken. Foyer Gallery is taken. But so anyway, it's
on. But the underscores, they look nice. They're like visually appealing. So I like them. Shannon?
You can find me at ShannonRayFink.com or at ShannonRayFink on Instagram. And that is spelled S-H-A-N-N-O-N. R-A-E-F-I-N-C-K-E. And the gallery, themiddleroomgallery.com or at themiddleroomgallery on Instagram.
Beautiful. Thank you both so much. This was just, I feel like we scratched the surface, but it was so fun. And I just appreciate the work that you both are doing to support artists and just like juggling all the things and trying to be kind to yourself and, you know, make your own art happen too. It's a lot. So lots of compassion and love for both of you.
Well, thank you, Kaylin. I'm like really amazed at everything that you've done, and you are a part of my story in some cool way. So
that means a lot. Okay. Bye, ladies.
Bye. Thank you again.
The Artist Mother podcast is curated and produced by Kaylin Butine. Music by Josh Middleton. Editing and mixing by John M. Butine. Please visit www.artistmotherpodcast.com for episode notes and to find out how you can further support this podcast.